Jackson, and this is Miracles Happen, Dreams Do Come True. And today I want to share with you a dream come true in my life, a friend beyond anything I had ever imagined for myself, the beautiful, beloved, precious, dear Joanna Cherry.
Hi, Iris. Thank you.
Thank you. The creator of Ascension Mastery International, an Ascension teacher and coach, minister, and author of two books on the Ascension, and my dear and beloved friend, Joanna Cherry. Thank you for being here again.
Oh, thank you for asking me.
Well, you know, the thing I've been thinking about the most that would help in the world is, and what I wish would happen so much, is that children would be taught to communicate in school, to actually communicate and be with each other.
Yeah.
And tell the truth and honor each other.
Yes, and love each other.
Yes.
Yeah, it's such an amazing skill that so few of us have, and adults and children, and to learn to really listen empathetically with another person, and to express our feelings without blame of the other person, and to ask for what we want. These are pretty amazing things to learn how to do. And one of the things that you and I are wanting to refer today to is Marshall Rosenberg's work. He has a wonderful book called Nonviolent Communication, and a workbook. Actually, an assistant of his did the workbook, Lucy Liu, called the Nonviolent Communication Companion Workbook. And I was just kind of going through some of the principles here about this, and so it's like really learning a whole new language, because we're not used to it. We're not used to thinking of these things in these ways and speaking in these ways, and it can seem kind of overly vulnerable, because so often if someone does something that we don't, that we don't care for, that we get upset by, our reaction is just anger and blame. And what that is really hiding deeper feelings that we have, maybe feeling hurt or afraid or upset or troubled, and instead of communicating where we really, what we really feel, we just sort of smother it over with anger, and that doesn't help, obviously, to make things better. So I've just been thumbing through the workbook a little bit, and I came across these five questions that we can ask ourselves if someone is saying something that we feel bothered, upset, angry, et cetera, by. And these questions are, and then we can take them more deeply if you want to. The first is, what am I really reacting to? What am I really reacting to? You know, I might think I'm reacting to one thing and actually be reacting to another.
Yeah, that's so, just what my mother used to say.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just giving that as an example.
Oh, uh-huh.
Of what I'm really reacting to.
Oh, yeah, right. Another question is, what is the intention behind my opening my mouth right now? In other words, what is my intention? Why am I, is it just to put down the other person? Is it just to express my anger? Or is it to further the situation and to have things become a matter of being understood and understanding, you know,
uh-huh.
and moving on. Third question is, what feelings are alive in me in this moment? What feelings are alive in me right now? Another question, the fourth question is, what is the need behind my immediate desire here? What is the need behind my immediate desire? And the fifth question is, am I making a clear request of anyone?
Wait, what is the need beyond my...
What is the need behind my immediate desire here?
Behind my immediate desire here. You know, I want us to actually do an example here where we use these.
Yeah.
And what is the fifth one? I think
the fifth one is really important.
Yeah.
Is, am I making a clear request of anyone? You know, so often we think that because we want something so much, then the other person should be able to mind read, basically, and to know what we want. And then if they don't do it, it's like, you know, we think that they're just ignoring our request.
Well, we think that if they loved us, they would have figured it out and done
this
by now.
Yeah, that too. And so that's really putting a lot of burden on someone.
Say the fifth question again. Am I making a clear
request of anyone? In other words, most of the time we don't communicate clearly like that. We want people to guess, like we were talking about, or they should love me enough so that they know.
Uh-huh.
Or we just sort of hint. We hint at things, but we don't usually, most of us don't have the skill to just come right out and make a request.
You know what? I think that what happens is the feeling of futility, that it's all kind of a vaguely murky, unconscious kind of thing, and
uh-huh.
and the person goes, oh, this is what I really want, or even they're not sure what they really want,
uh-huh.
and then they come into the situation with the attitude, if you loved me, you would have done it already.
Yeah.
If you knew me, if you were listening to me, you would know what I want, when a lot of people don't know what they want themselves.
Yeah, and a lot of people don't know how to listen either. And so a lot of us, we don't know how to listen without imposing our own agenda or going yada, 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 and waiting to reply or breaking in, you know, on the other person. Rather than being there with our whole being and listening with our whole being to what the other person is saying and trying to hear where they are, you know?
Well, yes, and I think it's important. Maybe that's the most important thing of communication, Joanna, because I have noticed that people that are stuck in a certain, like, you've known people that dressed and did their hair just like they did in high school, and they were still sort of living in high school 45 years later.
Yeah.
And I feel that kind of a pattern, and also the pattern of alcoholism is, you will notice that the person says the same things over and over, and they tell the same stories over and over, and they tell them exactly the same way. And you know why? Because no one has ever gotten it, what they were saying.
Uh-huh.
Nobody's ever connected with them and just heard them and said, oh, if I understand correctly, this is what you're saying. Let me
uh-huh.
see if I understand this.
Uh-huh.
And just hearing them. And then they have an opportunity to move on.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, Werner used to talk about that a lot.
Uh-huh.
About actually getting what a person is saying.
Yeah. Yeah, and I just kind of also stumbled across in this book four different principles of nonviolent communication. The first is like observation, like in this case, somebody's dog made a mess on my lawn. So I observed that their dog made the mess on my lawn. And the second one is, how do I feel? What is my feeling? What comes up for me because I observe that? And then what do I need out of this feeling? And then would you be willing to? And then a request. So instead of just saying, your dog just made a mess on my lawn, you know, what he translates that to in nonviolent communication. And I know it's going to sound kind of silly and different because we're not used to talking this way, but what he says is, when I see your dog leaving turds on the lawn, I feel upset. So there's the observation and the feeling. We have kids who play here, and I want the yard to be a safe, clean space for them. So that's the need. That's the feeling of the need. And then the request is, would you be willing to use this plastic bag to remove the turds? So that's got all four things. The observation of seeing the turds on the lawn, the feeling, I feel upset, and then the need coming out of that, I want my kids to have a yard that's clean and safe to play in. And then the last one is, would you be willing to remove them? So I think those are the four principles of nonviolent communication that Marshall Rosenberg suggests. And he has a number of other examples here, too, so I can give any others at any time.
Well, it's assuming that, I guess, that solves the problem if you ask the person to pick it up one time, but I sort of want to ask them to, more than pick it up, is let's really solve this problem so your dog goes in an appropriate place in the future.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe that's not in here because it's felt that it would put a little bit too much pressure on this, on just the immediate interaction, you know. And we have to solve this forever, you know. Maybe that's a little too much spin to, or too much weight to put on that interaction at that time.
Well, I think something needs to be stated where I don't want to be the one that's responsible for discovering these turds every time.
Yeah, so I guess you'd probably go on and just say other times, or maybe you would say, would you be willing to clean these up on a kind of a daily basis?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I would need to say that.
Yeah. But it's pretty amazing, and in the book, which I don't have here right now, but the basic book, Nonviolent Communication, I remember he gives an example. He actually travels. Marshall travels all over the world to help tense situations between people and countries and ethnic groups and things be resolved. And so he was actually in the Middle East, I don't know which country, but working to help the Israelis and the Palestinians, you know, resolve their differences. And one man stood up and called him a murderer, I think. And I forget the exact reasons the man had behind that. But so Marshall began to just kind of guess what his feelings are. It sounds like you feel pretty upset because you think da-da-da-da-da-da, and the man did, yeah, you know, and he just kind of kept working with him like that. And finally, the man just completely got to be in a peaceful and loving and understanding space and invited Marshall over for dinner. So things like that are pretty amazing when we can defuse a difficult, you know, tense situation And I think a lot of times, and we feel like if we're going to do this sort of thing, that we're, that it's just not cool. You know, it's not cool to actually say what we feel and what we need and make a request. It's, we're supposed to be sort of angry and that's a more cool way to be, or a more accepted way to be, or something. So I think it takes quite a bit of work, you know, or just sort of openness to this kind of new way of doing things to really let it come forward.
Well, I think the key too is in that second question. What is my intention in opening my mouth right now? Is that your intention has to be to have a better communication, to really understand each other, and to be able to love each other appropriately. One of the things that I've worked with people on a lot is coming to a place in their marriage where both people felt embarrassed to initiate lovemaking and would avoid each other. And you know why? Because they had this collection of things that they had not communicated about. And they could have started out as little things, and then in the mind became, you know, you have no regard for me, you have no respect for me, you don't show me these ways that I need to be loved, you ignore me, you don't listen to me. You know, it's this list of things that people put on, armoring themselves.
Yeah.
Against love. And,
yeah.
And I think that the important thing in with our intention in opening our mouth has always got to be, I want to restore our closeness. I want to restore our feeling of just loving and celebrating each other. I want us to feel comfortable with each other, like we're really, really, really deepest friends, that we really, really respect and honor one another. You know, but I think that that's maybe hard to do in the grip of anger or something.
Yeah, and again, to admit the feelings underneath the anger, which are likely to be hurt, you know, hurt and fear first, and then anger sort of covering them up. But
I really noticed that in my husband's passing, is that it was much, much easier to feel anger that he left me than the real sorrow of being without him.
Yes.
It was much easier to face.
Yes. I think that's true of all of us. Yeah.
Well, I want to suggest, though, that we don't really get past those things without experiencing them and letting ourselves be okay to have them.
Yes. Yes.
You hear what I'm saying?
To love ourselves in having them, if we feel grief or fear or hurt or those kinds of things, to love ourselves in feeling them, to have it be okay to feel this kind of thing, and even to communicate these feelings. I mean, that's really scary for most of us.
You know what's the fear under that, I think? Of saying what we really mean and really feel, giving the person an opportunity to reject our authentic self. You know, before the truth is acknowledged, we're not really offering our authentic self. And so, you know, if it gets rejected, it's like, oh, so they didn't know me anyway.
Yes. I agree.
But it's really risking yourself to say the things that make you vulnerable.
Yeah, especially in a society where that vulnerability isn't expected, and a person often doesn't know how to respond to it, you know, isn't used to responding to it in a genuine way. So it's like all learnings all around, learnings for all of us.
Well, I think that vulnerability in this culture is often identified or felt to be wimpiness.
Yeah, especially on the part of men. In fact, I was just watching, was just sort of skimming TV the other day, and there was a movie on called The Detective with Frank Sinatra, and I hadn't seen it before, and I just sort of gave it a few minutes to see if I wanted to see more of it, and it was Lee Remick, and he had a scene in which she was totally honest and vulnerable about where she was, and non-blaming, and he was just sitting there looking all morose and bitter, not saying a word, and I realized that that's very much how men have been portrayed for some decades, I think, in movies, that the man has, that he's supposed to be the one that doesn't feel or that doesn't show his feelings or doesn't communicate where he is and just goes around all closed-mouthed and cynical or hard or whatever.
John Wayne.
Yeah, John Wayne. And so I just kind of took that as a lesson in history, but it's certainly one that I hope, and I think it is actually changing around now so that men are learning that it's okay for them to have feelings too, and to be vulnerable and to you know, even cry. I mean, heavens to Murgatroyd, and Clint Eastwood actually let himself cry in the bridges of Madison County. And I know that, I think your husband Jerry was one of the ones who was just appalled by that.
I think he was just joking, but he was like, "Oh, not Clint Eastwood!
Yeah.
Oh no, not Dirty Harry! Can't cry. There's no crying in Dirty Harry.
Yeah,
like there's no crying in baseball.
Oh yeah." Yeah.
There's no crying in baseball. I love that.
So hopefully that ice is cracking and melting now. I think it is.
I do too. And, you know, lots of actors have cried in the movie since then. De Niro, come on.
Yeah. Well, Clint can do it. Anybody can do it.
Yeah.
If John Wayne were still around, maybe even he. So that's hard to imagine, though.
I don't know if John Wayne. No. I don't think so.
Yeah.
But you know, his kind of masculinity never appealed to me.
Uh-huh.
I didn't think it was... apart from that part of him that was like, "Can I help you, little lady?"
Yeah.
I didn't find him appealing in the least.
I found him a likable person, but he certainly isn't someone that I would have seen a relationship with.
No, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
It was like I didn't see him as an appealing man to me.
Yeah.
Mm-mm. Yeah, let somebody else be married to him.
And thankfully, that was the case.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, let's talk about a little bit about specifics and what comes up with people not communicating things. And my happiest relationships have always been those that I could go all the way through, say every single thing, they could say every single thing, and then we could come to a new level out of our learning there.
Yes.
And I think it's very important to take the right attitude instead of going, oh, there's that muck again to clean up.
Uh-huh.
Saying, thank you for this opportunity to learn and grow and understand.
Uh-huh.
I think it's really important to approach it that way.
Yes.
And when we get, especially if we get into a little hassle with somebody.
Yeah.
And would you like to talk about two things that happened when you were here last time? And, you know, as an example of things that can come up between really, really good friends.
You have to tell me what they are because I've forgotten them already.
I was purposely remembering them for this because this is when we decided to do
right.
the show. One was you had been cleaning the kitchen and
oh yeah
and it's something I really really appreciate about you. You just when I have company, I sort of tend to fall apart with those kind of things and just focus on sort of, you know, what it is we are to accomplish while we're together. We always work with ourselves, our own evolvement and each other's and the planet's. And we do that every time we're together. And that's kind of my focus, and I just sort of get the house as good as I can before you get here and put flowers and everything in and then just sort of fall apart and enjoy it is what is kind of my pattern. And your pattern is to keep up. I mean, I have said this to people before. Joanna can just walk through a room and it gets neater. and I love that. I love the neatness. I love that you don't let any dishes sit in the dishes in the sink, and I just love that. You want to go ahead and describe that one and what happened?
Well, I am a Virgo, and that does seem to be one part
of double Virgo.
Double Virgo. But that seems to be a part of it. Is that I really enjoy clean, clear spaces. And so I had worked a while, half an hour or more to get the kitchen really great. And then, Iris and I had shared a little meal together and so she took her things into the kitchen, but she didn't rinse them. You know, there was like a blender and a dish or something. And I had this thought, well, gosh, what? Am I the maid now? Am I just supposed to do everything? And so I got up the courage to share that with her, and she said, oh, gosh, I thought we were just kind of cleaning up together, and I was taking out the lemons, the rotten lemons, into the compost and doing something else. And I thought, oh, I see now. We were working together, and I was just doing one part, and you were doing the other part, and it just totally relieved my mind and my heart, you know. So just to share things and have them be understood was all that was required there.
Well, and to not feel taken for granted, or just expected I think that it's hard to give a gift if it's just like expected. And I so much appreciate that about you, but you know, in my side of the communication, we were sitting there and we started to get up and you said, give me your plate. So I thought that you had taken on the dish part. I went around and there was fruit that was bad in the fruit bowl, and there was some stale bread on the counter, and I took it to the deer. Deer adore stale bread. Never throw it away. I always throw it over the fence for them. And they also love white rice, just for people's reference there. But I had done those things. And then I also came back with the absolute willingness of finishing up, you know, anything that wasn't done. And I always just sort of hold it that you'll do as much as that is fun for you.
Yeah.
And then I'll sort of, you know, I'll just sort of, you know, do anything that's left.
Yeah, and this is just a perfect example of what we're talking about how we each have our own mind. We each have our own thoughts and feelings, and we don't know unless we truly are a totally perfect mind reader. We don't know what's in the mind of the other person, and so to assume that we know is really, really dangerous to a relationship. And I think we're finding that out more and more all the time.
Yeah. Well, then the other thing, which has been kind of a little ongoing thing with us, is like when you're driving, I'll point at something.
Oh, yeah.
And to me, I've made myself perfectly clear.
Yeah.
And do you want to just tell that story? Because I actually said to you, when you were asking me about something, and I kept trying. Oh, it was about Roger calling and where he was calling from and calling him back and that stuff. And I could not make myself understood. I just pretty soon, I was just like, blah, blah.
Yeah.
and then I said to you, sometimes you certainly are hard to explain things to.
Yeah.
And so I want to just have you share what.
Okay, yeah. And I noticed that I felt hurt by that. And I had this thought that I was stupid. Because I couldn't understand what she was saying, and so
that I thought you were stupid.
Yeah, yeah, and that you thought I was stupid, right? So again, you know, I sort of got up my courage and shared that what I was feeling, and then Iris said, "Oh gosh, no, I felt like I didn't know how to communicate so that it could be gotten, and if I can't talk, you know, if I can't explain myself about little things, then how can I have a radio show?" So it was really funny. We were both actually putting our own selves down, and then that got all cleared up, and we were able to just laugh about it. And so it's great to just really share where we are with our close people, and it's so helpful. So helpful, isn't it?
Yes, it is, and I think that people don't do that a lot of times, and then they just sort of collect things.
Yeah.
And they just start saying, well, she's always this way with me.
Yeah.
And then I'm sorry, didn't mean to.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Well, and then, you know, just expect the person to continue.
Yeah. And when we expect something of someone, that is actually known on an unconscious level. And so if the person doesn't have a built-in stopper toward being the way that they are expected to be, then they'll be that way. They'll be a perfect mirror for the other person's expectations of them, you know?
Yeah, that's why.
It seems to be one of the principles of life.
Well, that's why a lot of people don't like to go home at the holidays.
Yeah.
Like, everybody knows exactly how I am.
Yeah,
Yeah. And that's how they expect me to be. And mm-hmm. I have found that I've had to leave a lot of relationships because there wasn't any room for me to transform there. It's they knew how I was, and they insisted on it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And how they thought you were is probably some picture they had sort of plastered over your face from the beginning. It was never true.
Yeah.
Like how we need each other to be, or how we want each other to be, or something.
Yeah, well, you know, what I've found about that is just lots of people that I've worked with had a miserable relationship because they were always holding up their picture to the other person of how the person was supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, this, don't step outside of this box.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This is how you need to be with, for me. This is how you need to love me. This is how you need to talk to me. You need to say yes to all of these things.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no room for a real person in that relationship.
Yeah.
And what I have found when I put down my treasured picture is that for me, with my husband, I always found that, I'll just give an example of, I'm just sort of tongue-tied here. I would find that the actual truth of our relationship was always so much better than my picture. It was so much better than the romance novels. It was so much more alive and vibrant and healthy and delightful than my picture. And I'll give you an example of one time we went out to dinner on Valentine's Day, and then it was sort of a unplanned. We didn't have a reservation till the last minute, and I was kind of grumbling to myself inside that, you know, he didn't ever just make a plan and, you know, plan it all out. And
yeah.
And, you know, it was my picture of Valentine's Day and how my Valentine should behave. And then he said, we're walking along the street to the car, no plan, you know, and he goes, you know, I heard this ad for this movie that's just coming out today, and it's called Touch. You want to go see it? And I was real excited. It was one of those, as soon as you hear the title, you uh-huh. know that's something for uh-huh. you that's exciting and thrilling and just something
yeah.
your being wants to see. And so we went to see that movie, and we held hands, and it was very romantic, and it was very adventurous, and it was just a perfect, perfect Valentine's Day.
Wow.
And it, just forget my picture.
Uh-huh,
you know, my
uh-huh.
picture wasn't half. I didn't imagine, you know, what could have happened there, but I think that I always left it open for a miracle.
Uh-huh.
Do you know what I mean?
I do. That's wonderful.
And that was a miracle, and I think that if we can communicate joyfully and peacefully and say what we want, we can have those miracles. I think they're much more readily available, I think the ingredient there is patience.
Mm.
And there's a thing in the Course in Miracles that says patience is natural to those who trust.
Oh, that's a beautiful phrase, isn't it?
That means I know I'll get what I want.
Yeah. And well, or better. Or
yes.
Or something different and better.
Yes, and it's also allowing the other person their real greatness. There's
yeah.
so many, excuse me for saying this, but there's so many men bashers.
Yeah.
That they can't allow men to be anything but lowly
mm-hmm.
in their movie. And that's a little bit like this. Our younger son, when he was 6 years old, he wanted real police handcuffs. And he wanted them more than anything, and he'd do anything to get them. And so we bought him some real police handcuffs. And then nobody would play with him because anyone that played with him had to wear the handcuffs. And I think that's what it's like playing with someone that can only have bad guys in their movie.
Uh-huh.
You have to wear the handcuffs and be the one that owes in the relationship.
Uh-huh.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
And so I think that we always have to hold it open for the opportunity for that person to be great.
Yeah, and I think this is actually part of the pendulum swings, because women have been patronized in a patriarchy for so very long, and thousands of years, that in sitcoms on TV now, they're usually made to look stupid or foolish, you know, or very often so, and either that or they're cops, you know. it is part of our recognizing in relationship is that we are both great. We are both divine, and life itself is a miracle. I mean, life is actually a miracle, and is made of love, because God is love. Goddess life is basically is actually love. And so when, like you're saying, we can learn how to trust and the patience that comes out of that, then we really do start to experience everything turning out good, you know.
Yeah.
On a few minutes basis, like the things we were talking about, or years long or decades long basis, they turn out good.
Yeah, and that's always got to be the number two. What is my intention in opening my mouth right now?
Yeah,
is to take this relationship to a whole new level, where we not only understand this, but we understand at a greater level one another.
Yes.
I think that's so important. I think that's, you know, it's why we've been friends for, what, 22 years?
20 years, yeah.
20 years.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty amazing. We both learned so much. We both have so much to teach and give. And we've just, you know, invited those gifts and allowed them and appreciated them and been grateful for them. And that's the way, you know, every relationship that has at least a basis of resonance, you know, and that's the way everyone can be. Oh, it's yeah. It's really a great gift and a great discovery. And I think also that when we get to know who we are, that we're more willing to see who the other person is and to be with the other person. And so that sort of allows things to become deeper and deeper and deeper and more wonderful.
Yeah, just allowing somebody to be how they really are instead of our picture.
Yeah.
Is,
and I think probably, I don't know, which is just a wild guess, 80% of marriages are kind of entered into on this basis, that I'll be your picture and you be mine. And you know, it just doesn't. It's not a basis for a relationship. And some marriages are able to overcome that, and some aren't.
Well, you know, I kind of had a day of reckoning with that, where I realized that there were some things that I had unconsciously expected of myself.
Uh huh.
And therefore, my husband did expect them of me, and so I was obligated to do those certain things. And I found that that was, to be obligated was very unsatisfying.
Yeah.
But to give everything as a gift was totally satisfying.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I at that point I said, oh my God, when my, or as a friend of ours says, Crystal, oh my goddess. I just love it when she says that. Oh my goddess. I saw that, you know, it was just a given that my husband would pay the bills.
Uh-huh.
And I had always had, my whole life, my dad treated me as a princess. Any money I earned was mine, and all the basics were covered. And that's how my husband treated me.
Uh-huh.
He paid all the necessities, and that was always covered for me. And I saw that I had expected that as a given, and what it really was a gift.
Uh-huh.
And our relationship just transformed out of that to realize everything we did for each other was a gift. It wasn't an obligation. Mm. It feels so different.
I'll say.
And to not expect that, but also to rejoice in it when it happens. And I started just really appreciating being with a man that wanted to stay there, weather all the storms, raise kids with me, and handle all the details of life, that was just willing to be there. It's such a gift.
That is a gift.
So many people struggle to be parents by themselves, Joanna.
Yeah. That's quite a job.
It's not something to face without trepidation, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
It's the hardest thing I've ever done. And to think of the people that have done it without a devout partner is just mind-boggling to me. I mean, how on earth did they manage that?
So praises and kudos and blessings to all people who are doing that or have done that.
All people who are.
Congratulations for getting, for doing it, for managing it, for succeeding. Really, pretty miraculous.
It really is. It really is. I want you to tell people how they can reach you and also about the sacred images.
Okay, well, I have a beautiful dharma, which is sacred images of masters, of like there's Jesus's and Mary's and angels and archangels and Hindu and Buddhist masters and deities and others. And ascended masters. So it's a wonderful, wonderful collection of beautiful pictures. They're laminated. The most popular size, which is 5 by 7 inches, is thickly laminated and very durable. And these pictures are well known now in much of the country and even in some other countries. And if you want to take a look at them, the website is Sacred Images, and then a dash or a hyphen, and then AMI, the name of the company, AMI.com. I'll say that one more time. It's Sacred Images dash AMI.com. And on that site, you can also get a link to my own site, Joanna Cherry's homepage, I think is what it's called. And there I have lots of articles. I have 2 books. I have a bunch of CD sets, so these can be tuned into also if you would enjoy that.
And all of them are just lovely.
Yeah.
Just lovely.
Yeah, it's a real love of my heart to get these out into the world.
I know. And I thank you for doing it.
Oh, my pleasure.
Tell that story about the lady that was looking at St. Germain's picture and he came out of the picture.
Oh, yeah. There's a beautiful woman who's passed on now. Her name is Pearl, was Pearl. And she lived her last years up in Yreka, California, which is way north. Not Eureka, but Yreka, Y-R-E-K-A. And she told some beautiful accounts and of her coming into the consciousness that she was sharing. We'd go up and, you know, sit with her, visit with her once a week. She was quite a lady. And one of the things she said that was when she first saw St. Germain's picture in a book, that the picture came alive and bowed to her. And so she became one of the best teachers of the I Am movement, and then she split off and did her own work. So, it wasn't one of my pictures, but it is one of the pictures that I now carry. So,
well,
yeah.
Well, I think the point is that just putting our attention on the Ascended Masters calls forth their assistance to us.
Yes, it does.
And they're good to have around.
And it also helps us when we look into the eyes of the Master in a really good picture, we see our own divinity, because it's not the purpose to worship another person, but to also see the greatness in ourselves. So it sort of serves a multiple purpose. It connects us with the Master that we love, that we're looking at in a picture, and it does bring their assistance to us, their love, and it also reminds us of who we are, that we are just like this. We are also a divine being.
Well, for every Ascended Master, for everyone that's gained their freedom in this way, Richard Bartlett talks about is making a quantum field, and it grows stronger with everyone that attains their victory, and it makes a bridge that is easier to walk out on than if we had not known the example of those who have gone before.
Yes, absolutely.
And so we, in a certain way, tune in to their attainment.
Yes, I agree.
And I think that's so important.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, so I want to thank you for that, Joanna. Also, we have about 2 minutes. What do you want to do with that?
Well, why don't we just kind of go back and go very briefly over the basic principles of nonviolent communication, and that is that if something happens between you and a person that is hard for you, that you find yourself reacting to in an unhappy way, first of all, you observe. You're noticing what you're observing, that this has happened, this factual thing has happened. And then how do I feel? How do I feel about this? And then you express that feeling. You say, when I see, well, I'll just take the first example we use. When I see your dog, which is my observation, making a mess on my lawn, I feel this way. I feel upset because I need, and then that's the third part of it. What do I need that comes out of my feeling, or that's part of my feeling, is like I need my children to have a clean and safe space, a yard to play in. And then the last thing is a request. Would you be willing to, you know, clean up your dog's mess from my lawn? So those four principles are really wonderful, to notice what we feel, be vulnerable and able to express our feelings, and make a request that is clear to the other person without blaming them. So These are quite some principles to practice and highly recommended.
And most people want to give you what you want to.
Yeah.
Remember that people do want to give you what you want.
Yes.
Okay, my darling. Thank
All right.
you
thank
for
you so
being
much.
Here.
Yes. Thanks for the privilege.
Oh.
Opportunity.
Oh, you are so, so welcome. Will you come back soon?
Absolutely.
Okay, I love you so much.
Love you. Claire. Take care.
And I love you, listeners. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being with us.
We love you. We love you, Dawn, who does this wonderful radio show.
Yeah, Dawn is the best.
So be it.
Okay, and have a great week.
Yeah. Bye.
Bye. Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep shining until then. Happy trails to you till we meet again. I love you. And this is my wish for you, that all your dreams come true and are 1,000 times more wonderful than you ever dreamed possible. Ah, men, ah, women, ah, children, and yee-haw!